Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright.
With tonight's guest, founder and CEO of Future Proof Music School, John Von Singer.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am so excited about today's show. I can't even tell you. I feel like this is my show, in the sense that we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects of all time, and that's music and art. And I've got some people that I really enjoy and I know are going to give us so much. And as this whole week, as we were getting ready for this show, I had a monologue, and then something happened, and then I had another monologue. And just before the show, I decided, let's do both. So really quickly, I'm going to do both monologues because I like them both. I couldn't choose. Here's the thought that earlier I heard an Instagram. There was a post of a person who I don't follow, but the message spoke to me, and it spoke to the show that was coming up, this very show. And it touched me, and it touched on so much of what I think we're going to get into tonight. And when I first heard the speech and I watched it, because of the way the video was shot, I guess, and because of the way that the man was talking and the way he was dressed, at first I was thinking that this was a speech from like the 40s or 50s. And I almost prematurely sent it to a couple artist friends of mine saying, this speech is potentially more important today than it was when it was first delivered. But thankfully, I held off on that and just waited until the speech ended. And to my surprise, I went on to learn that the speech was an excerpt from a Cristiano Leone speech, and it was delivered at the Italian Design Week in Washington, D.C., just this past month, October 2025. And so I understand that the speech was so well received, at least by that audience, that it received the standing ovation. And this is what he said in this is the excerpt. I went on to listen to other parts of the speech, but this part said, artists are not entertainers. They are explorers of our collective interior. They venture into the turbulence of being so that we may recognize ourselves anew. They transform fragility to form, silence to sign. I think that's what he said. I didn't understand that word. Darkness into light. To support them is to share their courage to believe that creation, like knowledge, requires risk, patience, and depth. Artists have all been there. Risk, patience, and depth. I wasn't sure if he said death, but that's in there too. But I think he said depth. It is to affirm that culture is not consumption, but communion. That beauty is not comfort, but transfiguration. Today, when almost everything can be owned, monetized, or consumed, culture remains among the few things that lives only when offered. So let us invest not only money, but trust, attention, and love in those who create today. Now, we're going to be speaking with creators, major creators on our show today. But being a creator myself, obviously, here we are on the Life Changes Show that we've created or co-created with the energies of God and all of what brings us all together. I was creating this weekend. I was asked to sing at presumably, I think it was an LA Dodgers victory party, and they were expecting the Dodgers to win the World Series against the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto. And I guess they were expecting the LA Dodgers to have won long time before the by the fifth game or the sixth game or the seventh game. Little did they know the games would go on to to 7 games, and then past 9 innings. So during the time that the whole band and myself, we were all asked to be there at a certain time to start promptly at a certain time, the game was nowhere near ending. And so there we were, all of us artists, loving what we do and what we do it for. And there was, and everybody at this party, everybody was in another room watching the big screen and the game while we were celebrating for them with music in a whole other room with nobody. And by nobody, I mean nobody listening. And you know that phrase, a dance like nobody's watching? Well, we played for each other. We gave all, like, we played for each other. We played for God. We played for the world. We played for humanity. And when we were done, we were told, you know, we actually kind of heard you from the other room. Thank you. We're going to have you back. So we didn't know anybody was actually listening, but I guess they were listening. So that artist in us that plays to make music, that is present, that lives through what we do, and what we do comes through us for us and everybody that can listen. And if nobody's listening, then there is an energy, I believe, is listening for sure.
There's definitely an energy of listening at that kind of an event. It's the idea of a shared experience like that when you're dealing with, you know, the love of sports and people's commitment to that. And then I'll bet you guys just brought it back home, though, to the music and the dancing so that they could actually finish their celebration in the best way.
Well, I mean, I didn't go into all of it, but they asked us to stay longer, and then they, of course, paid us for that. And then they took a break. They came in, they danced a little bit, listened, and then they rushed back. So they got to have a moment with us and us with them, which was actually very special. We felt honored with that, actually, because the game was still going on.
Maybe they'll go back to the series for a three-peat, and you'll get called back to do it again to play for no one next year.
No. Never again. But funny thing. So, which brings us to the artist, right? We're artists, and we give, and it takes me back to the phrase that the person said, that that today, when almost everything can be owned, monetized, and consumed, culture remains among the few things that lives only when offered.
You know, I was thinking while you were talking that we've lost culture, right? Everything is transactional. And so to your point of playing, we're so used to, you have to play for somebody. How many people were there? How many tickets were sold? That we've gotten so far removed from playing the music for the feeling of the music, singing because it feels good to sing, enjoying the harmonies with the people that you're playing with, just doing it because you're having a life experience.
And that was our moment too. Well, this is our moment together with all these amazing artists on the show today. And we've titled this episode, inspired by the work that our guest does, combining music, education, and technology for the good of humanity. Our interview guest is a founder and CEO of Future Proof Music School. He's also a musician himself. He is John Von Segrin. Welcome, John, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here tonight.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and I thought for sure any artist could relate to the story I shared there in the beginning and at the end, right?
Yeah, I think if we love what we do, we've all played at some gig where nobody turned up. but you were there for the love of it, and you were like, I don't care, I'm here to play with my friends, this is great.
And there are times when we want to be seen, and we feel that we're not seen, and we're not seen, and sometimes that's in a part of the world, like John, I'm sure you've experienced, where you don't know anybody, and it's you're almost by yourself in this art. Have you ever felt that?
I certainly have. I've often been performing kinds of music that were off the beaten path, so I'm no stranger to that kind of situation.
And so what is the drive for that? What feels like is coming through for something, a moment like that for you?
I've always been looking for the deeper kind of experiences we could get for music, whatever that means. I've always tried to find meaning in life through music. I would say that's why I've pursued it for so long.
You've always wanted to be a performer. Why?
I think from the time I was young, in middle school and high school, playing music with people, of all the things that I tried back then, the experience of playing together with people is really what drew me and what still draws me.
So I think obviously you're in the perfect place doing the thing that needs to be done right now. And what's interesting to me is it almost seems like, well, of course, somebody that has this position will have had to have had, almost like you could write a description of the job description and say, you know, you had to have experienced this, you had to have experienced this. So could you give us a short run through of some of the, because you've experienced music like in different parts of the world and studied music in different parts of the world in a major way. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I sometimes joke if you're in a creative career for a long time, you end up doing a lot of different things. You're always trying to find the next thing that's going to work out, keep paying the bills for the next years. But so a brief sketch of my career. I originally wanted to be an acoustic jazz bassist, and I attended jazz school in New York City. And then I took a look around New York City, and I thought it would be easier to start my career if I wasn't in New York City. Oh. There's an awful lot of good musicians here. So I ended up, it's a long story, but I ended up moving to Tokyo, Japan. And there was a very active jazz scene there. I got to play a lot there. Then after a few years, I wanted to branch out my career. I started playing different types of music, and I ended up getting the chance to go on a year-long world tour with one of the biggest stars in Asia. Jackie Chung is his name. He was a pop star from Hong Kong. And I ended up playing bass guitar with a lot of the top musicians over there for 5 or 6 years. I went on multiple world tours. I've played pretty much anywhere where there's an audience for Chinese music. I've played there, including like Madison Square Garden and Wembley Arena in London and places like that. I then became one of the first computer DJs. I was DJing with a computer and MP3 files back when everybody else was still using vinyl records, and ended up then... There's a lot to cover. I ended up going to graduate school. I did a master's degree on the effects of the internet on music. I was back in the Napster MP3 days.
Yeah.
I then ended up moving to LA, and I got very involved in the experimental electronic music scene here. A lot of people working with computers, playing at warehouse parties here. And I ended up working for some music technology companies. I also was I did sound design on the movie WALL-E, which you've probably heard of.
Yeah, nice.
And then I ended up working for a school in New York, and I ended up getting into very specific niche, online education for electronic music producers. And I've worked for several different schools. I've been doing that since about 2011. And I've led programs that have taught hundreds of students since then. And most recently, I've started my own school, which is Future Proof Music School. And we're trying to use technology to make personalized music education more accessible and less expensive. I've partnered with Protohype, who's a dubstep producer. DJ's quite well known in the dubstep scene. And I think I talked for a long time, and I better take a break.
Well, it is all interesting, and we'll get more into this school, but leading into it, this whole idea of personalized, it's interesting that you're taking on all this in the sense that when you were in Hong Kong or Japan or New York or Los Angeles or anywhere else for that matter, I bet what's good music or what's cool or ways of learning are very different everywhere, right?
Well, not only are they different everywhere, but they've changed an awful lot over time, haven't they?
Oh, good
Since I
point.
started my career. I mean, I tell all the students now, when I was learning music, we had to play all of the notes actually together in the same room.
With
And
real
now we just
instruments.
program, and you record them in the computer, and you can move them around and rearrange them or whatever you want. And of course, I do that too, but that is kind of it makes them stop and think for a minute.
So the personalization that you're doing at the school, that really drives that home, is that potentially you can address anybody's musical experience anywhere, right? That's a
Yes.
big order.
Yes. Well, yeah, the idea of the personalization is that education traditionally has always been there's some kind of big program that you're signing up for. You're getting a degree or a certificate, and you're going through some sequence that was decided that was what everybody needed to know. And in reality, we all have, especially in this day of YouTube, we all have different levels of skill and background coming in. Some people have tinkered around on their own for years and learned quite a bit, and other people are complete beginners. So we like to say that we're going to try to take people from where they are to where they're trying to go, rather than try to fit everybody in a one size fits all type of program. And that's also a way of making it cheaper and more accessible to people, because you're trying to find out what they need instead of making everybody take all the same things.
Good point. You know, when we were talking earlier, that song lyric came to mind. Was it Video Killed the Radio Star? Was that the lyric?
Yes.
Okay, so it kept ringing in my head because I'm thinking, well, what is AI doing? Like, is it killing everybody, or you have a different take, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know what AI is going to do any more than anyone else, but I can see I've been through a lot of generations of technology and music. I've always tried to grab onto the new ones to find out what is fun and creative that we can do with them. So I kind of see AI just as another generation of this. We At the end of the day, somebody still has to decide. The artist still has to decide what they think is good and what makes sense to them and what they're going to put out with their name on it.
You brought
You know
something.
what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, and you brought something up interesting when we did talk about it earlier, and that is to say that yes, we could use technology, but as an artist, we want to be able to create. That's the reason why we do things. Like I was saying, singing this weekend, I'm singing because I want to sing. But you and I grew up with that kind of artistry. What if the artistry the kids grow up with is AI artistry? Are they going to want to do what we're talking about?
I think that, a young artist is always going to look at the means they have available to them and figure out how to tell their story with whatever they have at hand, whether that be a broken old guitar or a laptop computer or, ChatGPT or whatever it is. But it's still up to them to decide what their story is going to be and what pieces they're going to put in it. Maybe they won't want to use AI for anything.
Interesting. Oh, wouldn't that be interesting? Wow. Hadn't thought of that, I don't think. So tell us about music, education, and technology. So we shortened it for the good of humanity, but it's for the good of the artist, for the good of the audience, which ultimately is good. good for humanity. So let's talk about for the good of the artists. You've started to address that already. And how is your school addressing that?
Well, we're as I said, we're trying to take people from where they are to where whatever their goals are in music. For a lot of our students, it's going to be they're going to build an artist brand, and they're going to build a body of music around that, and then they're going to start releasing it, and they're going to try to find also who is going to like that music, maybe what's the best way to promote that music, that kind of thing. They have to, an artist these days has to wear all those hats at the beginning, especially. And so we are trying to, besides teaching them the usual skills, like how to actually produce the music, how to use Ableton Live and the other software, we'd like to show them how to use AI in particular to support some of the other things they have to do. Like, for example, when they're building their brand, there's a lot to think about. They have to research what other brands are. They have to brainstorm a lot, and AI can be really helpful in that. AI can be helpful in managing your social media, figuring out what your strategy should be. Maybe you're using it to help make some of the assets. But there's a lot of things to cover, and artists need a lot of help. It goes a lot beyond just making the music these days.
So it goes a lot beyond just making the music. And how does actually learning how to play a flute or a trombone or something play into this?
Well, it's interesting you say that. And, you know, I still play my instrument as much as ever. I was just playing jazz standards on my upright bass yesterday. But I always have told our students in electronic music that their biggest challenge really is to stand out and do something original. All these tools, even before AI, all the samplers and loop libraries, it's made it pretty easy to copy something that already exists. And I always have heard a lot of that. And the real challenge is to stand out and be original. So if you do play the trombone and you can figure out some way to use your trombone sounds in your dance tracks, then you're going to have something crazy that nobody else has. You know what I mean? Or if you can sing, even if you're not necessarily good at singing, but if you can put some feeling into it, you know, and that can give you a more personal sound than just downloading the latest loop that everyone else can also have.
Well, speaking of personal, I like that there's an online community component to the school, and that potentially students can connect with other students from any part of the world and create something that they normally wouldn't. Again, potentially you and I may have had similar experiences growing up in music where we actually were sitting next to each other in like a band class or an orchestra or something like that. Is there a substitute for that experience, and do we even need it, in your opinion?
I think music is at root, it was a way for human communities to stay knit together, you know, and communicate and share together. And we still do that with music, but in electronic music, the kind of music I worked with the most, the creation process often happens by yourself, and then you do come to share it, you know, when you're performing it or you're at these big events. But collaboration these days is usually some version of people doing it online together. It could be you're just sending files back and forth, but in our school we do have a really active online community, and actually one of the things they like to do is they get on a group video call and they kind of jam sounds back and forth. Definitely exists, you know. I mean, they would like to get together in the studio together or at somebody's house as well, but the reality is a lot of us are geographically dispersed. So, but yeah, that's something that people crave, I think, definitely. We want to help with that, help them connect with each other.
So obviously music can transcend language and other barriers and belief systems and politics and all of that. And potentially what that community and the fact that it's music based, it can bring us, well, them closer together, but the music closer to more of a cohesive world population.
I mean, yeah, I've always believed that. There's a lot to be said about the roots of collective dance music events and going all the way back to people living in tribes and dancing together at, annual ceremonies or something like this. It's not that far off.
So, transformation, and that is part of at the root of what you're doing here. So, what kind of transformation can we hope to experience from a graduate of your school, for example?
Well, I suppose there's the transformation of the artists that we work with, and there's the greater transformation that we would hope they might help bring to society. We would like to help young artists learn how to use the tools around them and learn to express their original creativity and their creative vision. And we think that's really important for, honestly, the future of everyone. That's what artists do, is look at what's going on and try to figure out how it makes sense. Suggest, that's how I see it, suggest different possibilities. Like it could fit together like this. AI might mean this, and that's part of the role of the artist. And then hopefully, they're able to share that with people in a way that is meaningful for the audience. And I think it, with music, that can happen, and with visual images, it can happen with a way that you might not even understand in words. It doesn't, you can't even articulate it to yourself, maybe, but you got some deeper meaning out of it.
Is there a performance component where audiences can tune in yet?
Not for the school. We might do something like that eventually, but we're not really doing that now. We have a YouTube channel. We're planning to feature our students' music in the near future, but we don't have any live events yet.
So interestingly, I know you are so busy with what you're doing now. I'm surprised and happy to hear that you picked up your acoustic bass yesterday and played it. What are your music aspirations like? Are you personally musically also getting something through this? And how are you going to, just I'm curious, how are you going to grow musically for yourself as an artist?
My musical arc has been a zigzag. I've
As
gone in a lot of different directions. In the last few years, I was still am. I have a dark wave band called Liminal Shade with a singer from Honduras named Mar Boreal. Just talking to her today, actually. And another partner, Benjamin Thompson. And I've also done a lot of ambient music in the last few years. I saw you had a picture of me playing bass guitar by myself. I had an ambient bass guitar concert a couple of years ago here in LA.
Yeah, we posted Wanderers on the page. Yeah, which is you soloing with a computer.
Yeah, with the computer and the bass. It was all done with the bass, but the effects were being done in the computer. But
Visuals, which it informs your work actually on both sides, right?
yeah, and that was a collaboration with a friend of mine. He was using the sound that I was generating to trigger different transformations in the visuals. And then I was wearing that white outfit because he was projecting the visuals over me. I was like part of the screen, so it was that kind of
Creative.
concept. So that was quite fun. I finally could
Creative.
play the bass all by myself with nobody else to get in my way.
What do you have? Not necessarily success stories, but that'd be nice too if you have one of those, or an aha, or something that a student has shared that they may have not experienced if it wasn't for the school. And I know it's still growing, and I know it's still in its infantile stages, but it's like it's on.
We're trying to, the moments that I treasure the most are the ones where I manage to get someone to see something in a new light or from a new direction. That's what I'm always trying to do, because I know that we can build a program where people will learn how to make music and they'll get better at it You know, you can learn to play the guitar by taking lessons from a guitarist, but to make something original, you need to be nudged or sometimes shoved out of your comfort zone at the right moment. You need to be encouraged and validated, but then at some point you need to be told, you know, you can't just do what your idols did. You have to step out on your own and take some chances.
And you're seeing that happen.
Yes.
One of the things that we got really excited about, because it's near and dear to our hearts, we talk about how growing up we did music, but it also was more available in schools, and instruments were available in music programs, et cetera, which we're finding less and less and less and less. So potentially this helps, could help fill a niche. Tell us why, because I know you like to talk about this, and it's, I think, very important why music is important that a child not just listen, but actually learn how to make it.
Well, that's a big question. I mean, to me, it's a way of, this is something I didn't make up. I'm not sure where my friend got this quote, but it's a way of accessing the ineffable. It's a way of working with energies beyond what you could explain in words. That's what I would say.
Beyond us.
Beyond us. And it's not the only way, but it's a very concrete way. You can learn how to play the piano, and then step by step, you learn how to access a different part of your mind, I would say.
So futureproofmusicschool.com is where people can learn more about the school, and you are all over as John Vaughn. John, Johnn, and Von, but your last name is also spelled Seggern for those that want to look you up that way. When we were closing our conversation, I was asking you for hope for the future. So obviously, we look to art, which is like the monologue, the first part of the monologue. We look to art for culture and for progressing humanity, or for helping us in moments of need. This feels like that, a moment of need,
Yes.
and a hope for progression of humanity. So,
Hooray.
tell us about what you have seen, because you've seen the different stages of music, what the school and what the technology potentially has to offer us of hope going forward together in this.
I mean, we would like to help young artists who come to us learn how to make sense out of everything that's going on, and show us, all of us, that vision. You know, I've been a musician all my life, and at this stage I'm more involved in trying to help young musicians learn the skills to tell their story. And I think that's more important than ever. That's what we really need.
And since you've shared different pieces of your life, and since you're in this CEO and founder of this school, I think might be a great opportunity to have somebody like you share that those moments that you've talked about, how you weren't sure which direction to go, and you thought maybe over here would be better, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure that wasn't easy, and you were in a strange person in a strange land. I didn't mean you were strange. I mean, you were a stranger in a strange land. And so those, what have they done to your brain or your abilities today that potentially inform what you're doing?
I would say that I'm trying to start this school. I am starting this school. I shouldn't say try. It's a moment when everything is changing very rapidly. And for us, one of the biggest things is how fast technology is changing, and the technology that we can deliver the school, but also the technology of making music and the technology of the performance of the music. So we are making a program and a curriculum at a time when we have to plan. In 6 months, it's not going to be like it is now because we know XYZ is going to happen by then. And I have to kind of plan for kind of continuous change, I would say.
And so, having become an expert in continuous change, this is why you're so good at doing it now.
I mean, I thrive on this honestly because I've been a jazz musician all my life.
Right.
That's my core. And at core, when you're a jazz musician, your job is to just sit and listen to what's going on around you and make sense of it in the moment. And
That's,
my
yeah.
role as a bass player has always been to kind of provide the ground of that, find where what can be solid for everyone else to spring off of. So.
Nice. And so why, hence why you're so perfect for this. So, in that we have, just tell us what the name means to you, futureproofmusicschool.com.
We'd like to educate people in how to stay future-proof in the music industry. We'd like to teach you the skills that you'll be able to use to keep updating yourself as things continue to change. AI can be a big part of that to help you research what's happening and what new trends you might want to get on, but it's not all about AI.
Nice. John, thank you so much for what you're doing and for sharing with us. Looking forward to more of all of it, from the school to your music. It's so great to connect with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's fun talking to you.
Likewise, John von Segerns, and futureproofmusicschool.com is the website, and then you can look him up. We have links at the Life Changes Show page for John. Thank you, John. Mark, I have to say, like, so life changes of him and what he's doing, especially like at the end there where he said future proof. It's not just about this is now, but we know that the now will change. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, oh yeah, we do. I mean, that's the one thing that we all have in common, right? Now
Yes.
changes.
And if there is anything that we have noticed before in just life, art has maybe changed. Well, everything's changed a lot, but art has changed, music has changed.
Well, I don't know why we put labels on things. Art is every last little bit of creativity. We act like things are separate and we put these labels and, give a whole lot of pomp and circumstance to them. But yet, everything is art. Every rock you used to pick up in the forest, every tree you would climb, or every sunrise you'd witness. And then, yes, to those that embrace their ability to express themselves, then it came out in painting or sculpture or music or whatnot. And being able to employ these new tools that are coming at us so rapidly in a way that advocates for the human creativity, I think is wonderful.
It seems like there's so much to learn, and yet I probably there has always been so much to learn. When somebody was just learning an instrument years ago, they were probably also learning a bunch of other things, like how to farm or something. I don't know, or build a house. So there's all, maybe that's part of why we're
So
here.
we need to build farming equipment that are instruments as well, like to combine the two.
Oh, musical farm equipment. Okay, on that very note, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is David and I need help. Ever since I can remember, I have believed and said that the truth will set us free. And I have researched so many things to make sure that I was embracing truth. But today, when I research, I find so many conflicting answers, and I no longer feel that I can easily find truth. So my question is, does truth exist in today's world? And how can I determine truth versus lies?
Hi, David. Thank you for asking this very important question. I admire the fact that you care about truth and are willing to do the research necessary to determine what is true and what is not. We live in a world full of noise and manipulation, and it is more important than ever to discern truth from lies. And yes, David, truth still exist in today's world. Even though it's harder to see clearly, truth itself hasn't disappeared. What has changed is that we now live in a time where anyone can publish anything instantly, and opinions are often presented as facts. However, truth is still real, but now it takes more conscious effort to discern truth from lies. Here are some practical steps you can take to determine what is true and what is not. The first thing I do when questioning truth is to check the source. I ask, who is saying this? What is their motive? I have discovered that reliable information usually comes from people or organizations who show their evidence, admit uncertainty. And if a source insists that they alone have the real truth, that's a red flag. So please look for consistency across independent sources. If multiple credible sources from different perspectives agree on the same data, it is more likely to be accurate. And, dear David, please pay attention to your inner reaction. Truth tends to bring clarity, calmness, and expansion, even when it's painful. Falsehood often brings confusion, fear, or self-righteous anger. Your nervous system can actually be a guide if you learn to listen quietly before reacting. And please remember that sometimes truth isn't just about facts. It's also about your personal alignment. When you live, speak, and act in integrity, when your heart, words, and actions match, you are living in truth. That inner alignment is often more freeing than any external certainty. I encourage you to start your day with a 5-minute ritual before opening your phone or turning on the news. A very simple and powerful thing to do is to thank the universe for another wonderful day, and you can say, thank you, thank you, thank you for showing me what I need to see and hear what I need to hear in order to be the best me I can be. Doing this can help you stay grounded in truth, not just intellectually, but emotionally and spiritually too. This simple daily ritual connects you to your inner truth, the place that doesn't depend on outside opinions. From that space, you can face information with calm discernment instead of reactivity. And when something shows up that you feel you need to discern truth about the situation, all you have to do is research the issue carefully. You can find many good sources by researching trusted news sources online. I believe that the more you do this, you'll see patterns and you'll start recognizing how truth feels in your body and mind. It is also most important for you to practice honesty with yourself in small, everyday ways, even when it's uncomfortable. When you align your words with your heart, your energy becomes clearer. That integrity strengthens your intuition, making it easier to recognize truth externally as well. When the world feels full of distortion, the safest place to return to is your own awareness. That inner stillness doesn't lie. It always knows what's real. As you practice listening to that, you'll begin to see through this confusion more easily.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, I am personally delighted, and we are delighted here on the show, to welcome two performance guests. One is an accomplished musician. He's a multi-instrumentalist, a vocalist, a writer, and so much more. Rick Cowling, and the other is an award-winning actress, vocalist, and writer, again, and so much more, Sherry Hersey, and the two of them come together in this power couple as Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey. Welcome both of you to the Life Changes Show.
Yeah, right. Thanks, thank you, Filippo.
Such a pleasure. Rick, I was trying to figure out this morning, thanks to Harold and Nadine Davidson, and of course, Jim Ippolito and West Coast Music. You and I have known each other and worked every year at least once for almost 30 years.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. You're right.
I think it's true. And Sherry, what I love about this story is that I've been wanting Rick on the show for the longest time. And of course, we know how busy he is, and you as well. And then, you know, one of these days we're doing this, we're working on this movie, we're working on this album, and of course it was all true. I'm touring with Kenny Loggins, and I'm touring with Ambrosia, and of course it was all true. I saw him on TV. There he is on the Jimmy Fallon show, lead singing Ambrosia. Good on Rick Cowling. And then he came to me and he said, you know, I think we can do this. And I'm thinking, I'm inviting him. He's like, no, I want to do this with Sherry.
Oh yeah.
And here we are. And now I know why.
Yep. Aww. That's right. Well, we talked about it a little bit at Harold's place where I was telling you about the movie and stuff, but so excited about what's happening with Sherry and me now, and our movie's out. And Sherry can talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah, we have a movie out that we wrote most of the music for, and I wrote the story for actually originally as a PBS special almost 15 years ago, and we ended up it ran at special as a special on holidays, and this was like my first big shift into producing. I'd been, you know, an actress for many years, been on Home Improvement and a whole bunch of other shows and TV movies. And someone asked me to star in a PBS pilot that I ended up being the producer of, and that got my feet wet in the other side of the business. And that ended up being something that Rick and I got to do together. We turned this special into a feature film, writing a wraparound story and adding a bunch of footage. And he's also in the movie. And I star in the movie and we sing together in the movie. And Kenny Loggins actually made a cameo appearance and gave us the rights to use Heart Light. We did our own version of his song, Heart Light, together.
He sang background vocals for us.
For us. Right. And he helped produce it. It was very, very sweet.
He was amazing to do that.
And actually, Harold introduced me and Rick too, so we have a mutual friend.
Oh really?
Oh, Harold. Different Harold. Sorry.
Okay.
Different Harold. I was thinking I have one Harold in my life.
That's right.
Yeah.
But funny. I just loved listening to. First of all, I loved listening to, you know, just the show so far. I've been really excited about it, and listening to Dorothy too. But it just reminded me that when I first met Sherry, it was all about positivity. She was working with Smile TV, and they were doing positive media, and we decided to take it a bit further, and we started Turning On the Light Entertainment, and we still produced quite a few things for PBS, and I, you know, as a kid, I'd always carry around a little 8mm, you know, movie camera and try to make a movie, and I just always loved it, but that was always a secret thing. I never really did it for real. I just was always into the music thing and production and songwriting and of course playing live. But when I met Sherry, it was like, wow, you know, not only is she just amazing to hang out with, and I just really love her energy, but she was doing this. And I was like, ooh, this is my dream. You know, everything can come together in one big thing where I could actually get my feet wet and actually producing some visual things too. And positive, what could be better? Putting some positive things on this planet.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it was my dream to actually have a new genre of music, which is, I think, now becoming more popular. We started this Smile TV thing. We were one of the early people of doing positive media. And now really then, of course, who would know, but I ended up going to Unity Worldwide Ministry Seminary and becoming a minister for Unity Worldwide Ministries.
Right.
And I've been a part of
brilliant
movement since I was a teenager. It's a really beautiful spiritual path. It's a way of life that is just very focused on the positive and practical application of teachings from all of the master religions, mostly based on the teachings of Jesus. But it is really a very embracing of all the world religions originally Unity came together as a place of prayer for all religions. And I just love it at this time. I want to invite Dorothy because I'm listening to what she just said. And I'm like, yes, yes, go, baby. I mean, it sounded like my talk from Sunday.
Nice. And, I want to come too.
Yeah. So Rick and I do music together. And that this has become an amazing, fun outlet for us. We end up doing music for a whole lot of spiritual centers all across the country during COVID. That's what we did for fun. Yeah. We were producing our movie, finishing our movie, and producing music videos for a whole bunch of centers. And
well, we sure learned how to do that quickly. It took, you know, it's
talk about
process.
Using technology, right?
Exactly. I mean, we have over, I think, 100 music videos on Turning on the Light Entertainment YouTube channel of us singing these positive songs. Oh, it's pretty fun.
The two of you are a breath of fresh air, and in more ways than one. And I have to say that I knew maybe a hundredth of what Rick did, and I thought he was really good at it. And then I come to learn so many other things. And then listening and learning about you, Sherry, I was duly impressed and delighted that you all have taken your art into these other areas that are helping people. So I'm because I'm proud and happy and impressed, I'm just going to say that I already mentioned touring with Kenny Loggins as his guitarist and lead singing and playing for Ambrosia, which, by the way, you didn't mention in your bio that you were in that movie, right? The Yacht Club movie or the Yacht, what is it?
Yeah, well, I didn't, it was Yacht Rock, I believe.
Yacht Rock, yeah. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I heard you were in it.
And, there's a clip of, you know, where I'm playing it on the stage with Kenny, you know.
But you've done lots of TV and commercials and The Bachelorette, music for Beverly Hills and 90210, Teachers on ABC, et cetera, et cetera. You've worked with Bonnie Raitt and Gladys Knight and Laura Branigan, Melissa Manchester. I mean, seriously. And then you, Sherry, I thought, oh my gosh, I've known her all my life and didn't know I knew her, but I didn't know you. But of course, award-winning actress, and you did mention Home Improvement. You were Eileen.
Girlfriend, yeah.
And then Kristen Dunst's mother in the blockbuster Bring It On, and so many other things. So to see all of this talent and all of this creativity being put into the course that Unity Church, is it, or Unity, what do you call it? Unity.
Well, they're centers for spirit. They're spiritual centers, yes, yeah. And churches. Yeah. Churches.
They're still church. Right,
yeah, it's still church.
And Lily's Light, which is for children and also for adults. And so tell us more about Lily's Light.
Yeah.
Well, Lily's Light kind of birthed from my doing a pilot for children for PBS that I didn't put together, but I ended up being a producer on. And it was for even a younger audience. And then I really realized, I grew up with a foster sister, and I realized that there was a need for programming for that 6 to 9 age category that wasn't animated, because at the time this first was created, there was nothing really out there for children that age that was like what we had when we grew up, like live action. We had Mary Poppins and we had all these incredible Captain Kangaroo. I mean, we had all these great things that we could draw from. And I had two young ones who were looking at television and didn't even know when I showed them The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins that there were real people as actors, you know? So there was a lot of thought put into doing a live action musical. And so that's what Lily's Light started at and became this half hour little special, turned into an hour special. It was a pilot, turned into a special, then it turned into a feature film. And it's really for a very young audience. It's very much a kind of a modern day Mary Poppins, but it advocates for fostering and adoption. So it had an earthly mission as well as a spiritual mission. And it really is a very spiritual movie. It's about having the power in your life to create what you want by your choices and your thoughts. It's about this enchanted lighthouse that we go up to in this lighthouse foster home where I play the mother of all of these young kids, and really crazy, fun characters. Mindy Sterling's in it, Fred Willard's in it. It has an incredible cast. And we go up to the top of the lighthouse and we can imagine where we want to be, and we can project ourselves into our imagination. And that's where the story unfolds that gives the help necessary to the story. Like, there's a young kid who's having a challenge, and we go up to the top of the lighthouse and go to Hamelot.
Yeah. Take him on.
Yeah. Go on a journey where
Hamelot, where it's like Camelot with pigs, right?
Yes. Camelot with pigs. Exactly.
Oh,
and, yes. And he learns his life lesson through that adventure. So anyway, it's a very sweet, very positive show that has a lot of spark of light in it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of spark of light, yes. Tell us where does this happen? Is that when that song comes on that we're going to hear?
You tell him, Rick.
Yeah. Spark of light is, yeah, when we started making it into the full length movie, we had to add more songs and a new storyline. And so Sherry and the script writer came up with this wraparound story because we needed a new cast. It had been several years. Spark of Light was a song that the first song that Sherry and I sat down at the piano and just wrote one day. And we really loved the idea. And Sherry wrote that into the scene. And it talks about everything is a spark of light, everything, you know, just anyway, so that I was so happy that we were able to use that song. And then at the end, we you know, the cast sings it in the movie, but at the end of the movie, over the credits, Spark of Light plays, and this
our version,
yeah, duet version of Sherry and me, that plays at the end over the
It's
credits.
A very different version in the movie. It's a more I don't know. It's a fun,
there is
more
a spark up-tempo. Of
yeah,
light.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very different version of it in the movie. We dance to it, and the kids sing it, and it's really fun. But then Rick and I did a little more, you know, duet version of it for the end credits.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fun, there is a trailer at the Life Changers Show page for Sherry Hersey, Sherry, Sherry, Hersey, Hursey. And you can see the trailer there. But of course, when you go to, we'll talk more about Total Entertainment when we come back. But so Lily's Light, though, is available online, actually.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can go to Lily's Light, the movie.com, and find out where it's playing, but it's still streaming on Amazon and Tubi, I think, and mm-hmm. FilmRise has the distribution. So they have their own channel. It's on their kids' channel. It's all over, I think.
Yeah.
Still
so
available
that
everywhere.
It's out there.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you for putting it out there. Here is Spark of Light from Lily's Light with our performance guests, both of them performing together, Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey. Of course, it's pre-recorded here on the Life Changes Show.
As a flower shows its petals, as a baby bird takes flight, when the morning sun says day's begun, there is a spark of light.
As the snow falls on a mountain in a canopy of white, as a rainbow crawls through a waterfall, a spark of light, and it ignites the flame within us,
a burning love that has no end.
This wheel of life spins its gifts of light round and round again. When we give our heart to someone, we try with all our might, when we sing out loud, reaching for the clouds, there is a spark of light.
Mm-hmm.
alone takes the very breath of life. As it was in the beginning, in this world that has no end, the wheel of life with its gifts of light spins round and round again. And in our deepest sorrow,
or in our darkest night,
when we're far from home, we're not alone, there is a spark of light. Without a doubt,
the stars come out, there is
a spark of light.
And so there is a spark of light. Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey from Lily's Light, the movie. Thank you for sharing that. Let's give that website again for Lily's Light. What?
It's lilyslightthemovie.com.
Lily is spelled with three L's. Three L's. L-I-L-L-Y, by the way.
That's good. Thank you, honey.
Just in case.
Very, very well. You know what, Rick? I'm going to just real quickly take this opportunity. I realized when 30 years ago, when I was kind of first starting out and doing things that I had never done before, you were so always, but that very first time I remember I was so nervous and you were so kind, and with everything else you had to do and being musical director and all that, you wanted to make sure I had enough time to rehearse and you got the band to do this. And when the key wasn't right, you got everybody, like, you took over and made that happen in a way that really, I'm sure I said thank you at the time. I know I always say thank you, but thank you. And I could just see you, how you're great in these roles everywhere else. I mean, in everything that I've seen you do. But tell us about your role, both of you actually, at Unity of the Oaks, and also about Total Entertainment.
Okay. Well, when I met Sherry, she was going, but she was the music director there, actually. And, you know, I didn't go. She went out every Sunday morning. I had late night, Saturday night gigs, as you can tell, probably. But finally, I decided to go, and I just really loved the vibe, because it wasn't a preachy thing, because I sort of was kind of done with that in my life. But I found a really warm, loving place where the whole community was just this big ball of love, and being there, you just feel this really warmth, welcome feeling, you know. And the songs, Sherry just had so much fun putting the songs together, and it was just so fun. And I joined in the band and played guitar with everybody. And pretty soon, I started becoming a fixture, because I couldn't help it. I wanted to be there. And when it was suddenly, you know, after going through her minister training, they said, "Hey, you should be the minister. You know, yeah. The minister's leaving and going to Arizona, and we need somebody." And so, I decided to be supportive in that role. I would take over the music director at Unity, but I just, you know, it's an hour on Sundays, and it's just a blast, and we have so much fun, and the energy is so
amazing,
wonderful,
as you can tell.
It's light and fun, and it's not a heavy duty production. It's a guy on a cajon, a bass guitar player, and really good piano player, and me on acoustic guitar, and that's it. And then Sherry joins us, or whoever, and just have a great time. It's, I don't know, a fun time is had by all all times, and we just love it. Just
we call ourselves unapologetically inclusive, because it really truly is a place of spiritual exploration and love in action. I mean, we just are there to support each other. Yeah. And right now I think it's something the world needs, to have a place of complete acceptance of each other. Yeah. No matter where you've come from, or what your belief is, or what your politics are, it doesn't matter. It's a spiritual path, which just puts us all in the same vibration of love. and what's really important.
And Sherry, you say a lot of your success in your life and a lot of your joy to unity. And I would imagine that's not just career-wise, but personal.
Yes. When I first moved out to, I was brought up in the South, in the deep South, and there were a lot of challenges in my youth. And when I first came to California with my mother, I mean, I taught like this when I first came. I think that's why I had to develop such an ear that to learn to speak without my accent. That is probably what also put me on a path of doing so much voice work, singing and voiceovers for so many movies. And I did Shrek and Madagascar and all these other movies, singing and doing voice work. I know that's because of that challenge, you know, and it's one of those things that I believe that every little challenge in our life, you can find the good in it. You can find God somewhere in that or whatever you want to call it. And that was one of mine. It taught me at an early age that these things that I thought were challenges in my life ended up being part of my blessing. Mm. Even my curly hair that I rejected in the South ended up being a signature of mine as an actor. And I ended up kind of falling into music, and the kids in my high school that were so awesome. And I was at Pali High. There was Jerry Paris from Happy Days. And oh my gosh, who's the other really big producer that I'm thinking of, the kids Don, that were there with me?
Don.
Oh, well, Don Petrie was there. That's true. A lot of families that were in the industry, and I was in the shows and in madrigals and the music, and I fell into pretty naturally being pursued as an actor at a young age, at 18. Before all of that happened, I had walked into a Unity church knowing that there were some issues I had as a young person and was away from my family. I was estranged from my father. So I needed support. And Dr. Sue Sicking, who was the minister at Unity by the Sea, helped set me on a very positive path. When I ended up becoming a minister, I did not do it with the intention of taking over a church or being a spiritual leader whatsoever. I did it for me, just for my own personal knowing that I had done that. Rick was still touring. I had a lot of time. So I did that for myself. It was just one of those things that for the last, 13 years, I'd been serving this community as a give back, because I love them and I love what they stand for. And I love what we've created at Unity of the Oaks. Yeah. I was driving before we moved out here close to them. I was driving there like every Sunday, 40 minutes, just to be a part of the community. So when they asked me if I would step in, Rick said, I think it's ours to do. Yes. So
I feel like we need to give a website out.
Oh.
There is one, unityoftheoaks.org.
Okay. Unityoftheoaks.org.
Yes, you can find us on there. You can see, or you can go to our website, our total entertainment. .com also, which is totlentertainment.com, which stands for Turning on the Light Entertainment. You can go there in our YouTube channel or even the Unity of the Oaks YouTube channel and see our Sunday morning services. You can even go on that website, Unity of the Oaks, and press live stream and see us.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'm glad we gave it out. And before we hear our last song, which I'm assuming is part of the services, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Really quickly, what do you want to say about Total Entertainment?
Total Entertainment. Totally. Sherry had that name started as a production company already, and I really liked it. And she was doing, you know, the Smile TV at the time, and it was sort of dissolving a bit, and we decided. I was just starting to, you know, tag along in the productions and stuff. And Sherry said, we kind of came up with the idea of co-owning this. Yeah. And it would put together, you know, because I ended up doing a lot of the music. I was learning how to shoot video. I was learning how to edit. And so I loved it that we were able to put things, videos out to PBS and wherever else they got out to on the internet, you know, with these great things that were happening around our areas and people that were doing amazing things. Very small, short videos. Some of them were 10, 15 minutes. Some of them were 3.5 mm-hmm. minutes.
Some were interstitials.
Interstitials, things like that on PBS. But we just decided to go for it. So we made it. We made the company. We started doing it. And we ended up using that entity to produce the movie. And we haven't looked back. We go up and down about how many things we're producing, especially because when I'm on tour and she's doing the ministry thing, there's not a lot of time in there, but we're trying now to really focus on new material, new media, new songs, starting to write a script for a second movie. So we're very excited.
Yeah, we're actually releasing an album of our originals this month coming up. We did an EP about 5 years ago, for our community, but everybody's been on our case. So we decided, you know what, it is time for us to now focus. We've done so much with other people and other artists and other things in our lives that it's time for us to focus on our dreams and what we really want to do and what we want to put out, our legacy. So Rick is finishing he's such an amazing sound engineer, as you can imagine. And he's finishing our first album for release, I think.
We're hoping to have a pre-release sort of concert thing happening in a few weeks. We'll see how that goes, but I'm shooting for it. We're shooting for Sherry's birthday, which is 11/22.
Okay.
Let's hope for that. Yeah.
Let us know. And if it's something that we can share with our audience, we'd be happy to. And so what is Joy?
Tell
them about that.
Okay, so last year, Sherry had this idea to split up the congregation, as it were, into the four groups, which is faith, hope, love, and joy, right?
For Advent season.
And we created these teams so everybody could be on a team and just kind of get everybody kind of talking and
little spirit groups within our whole congregation.
I was in Team Joy and I said, I'm writing a song. So I texted everybody in the group and said, send me your ideas, what joy means to you. They sent back, a kitty cat on my lap or, all these little things. And I said, you know what, these are things. But it also occurred to me that, joy isn't always on the outside of you what gives you joy. Sometimes, you can feel joy just thinking of these things. So that tells you that joy is coming from the inside.
It's a state of consciousness.
It doesn't come from outside you. And so in the middle of the song, after I've talked about all these things that bring you joy, I also said, but true joy comes from inside, and then it talks about what joy really is. Then we performed it. The joy team our Sunday during Advent, or what do you call it? Is that right?
Yeah.
Every team went up and did their
beautiful, fun thing. The first week that was faith, and the faith team decided they wanted to run the service. And I said, okay, fine. Just tell me and Rick, tell us what you want us to do. We'll fill in.
Yeah.
And they did the, the opening prayer and the songs and the this and the that's. And then the next team said, hey, we want to do ours next week. So
we
ended up growing. And so Rick and I
started something.
Rick put this song together. And he started with the idea, and then
Sherry helped me finish up the lyrics, and I really like it. I'm really happy how it turned out.
This is interesting because I'd forgotten about this, and here you send us a few songs to choose from, and I chose this, and obvious reasons it's a great song, and we wanted to have it on the show, and it's a great message. But until you started sharing this story, I didn't remember. You had told me about it last year, and I remember how excited you were in sharing about it. Like, you had this smile on your face, and you put your arms together like holding a kitty cat or something. Like, I remember this, and I'm thinking, so you're feeling this stuff. I'm happy to hear that. I mean, you're for real. Of course you're for real. You're Rick Cowling, and you're Sherry Hersey.
You rock, man.
Thank you so much. This is exciting.
So, I have to say, he is, that is who he is. And I sort of said to God, to the universe, when I was single, before we got connected, that I was not interested in anyone who didn't show up at my door with their hands up in the air, all excited for life. And he did that the very first time he came over to my house. And I went,
Well, there it is. Now we all know. And here is the song. And, where is it available?
We haven't put it
this
out yet. This will be a first broadcast,
yeah,
right,
guys,
now.
Yeah.
Wow. This is like a universal premiere.
Yeah. I love it.
The songs from Lily's Light are on Spotify. All the songs from Lily's Light.
Soundtrack.
That's all that we've released. We have not released our new album. So,
It's good to know. Lily's Light songs are on Spotify, and you heard it here first, folks. World premiere of What Is Joy, Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey here on the Life Changes Show.
A sunny California morning, a perfect cup of joe, an out of nowhere text from someone you knew long ago. A harvest moon, a bluebird song, a grandkid's hug could never last too long. A kitty cat in your lap taking a nap, or a cuddle with a dog named Max. What is joy? 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 Up to see it rise, holding hands in a slow dance surely brings more joy to life. It's the little things, it's the angel wings, it's hearing your favorite song, it's making a family of your friends and knowing you belong.
What is joy? This is joy. Thank you so much. What a joy having both of you on the Life Changes Show tonight. Truly, Rick Cowling and Sherry Hersey. What a joyful moment.
It is for us too, Filippo.
Thank you so much.
We're so honored to do this.
My pleasure, our pleasure, and all the best to you. If any of you missed the links that we gave, we have links both on the Rick Cowling page, and that's Rick Cowling, RickCowling, and then again, Sherry Hersey, SHERRYHURSEY. And of course, there's going to be more coming from them. So follow them, find them, look them up, enjoy them, and have joy in your life. Thanks to them, as we did tonight. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. With a big thank you to Rick Cowling and to Sherry Hersey. And another big thank you to John Von Segern. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.